think most of the one that we have made is about in our previous sitting. The FSSC Act clearly states that the 12 non-executive members of the board, they will be appointed by the president. In this case, it is the president's role to do that appointment, but the president will do this on the advice of the National Assembly. Okay? Then the fourth one that we looked at was the appointment of the Board of the Media Development and Diversity Agency. This act is a 2002 act, and according to this act, once again, the board would be appointed by the president. This is on recommendation of the National Assembly. Okay? So basically, in all of these examples that I have cited, it's very clear that the appointment is done by either the minister or by the president. But in these cases, I think in particular, this is pretty much the kind of advice that we also got from the state law advisors. We had submitted the research that that DST has done. We've consulted with them, and the response that we have received from the state law advisors has been very much in line with what I have now presented to you. Thank you, Chair.
I'll allow members to comment on what DSTS made as an input so far.
I must say that, you know, I've just recently come through a process of dealing with something like 10 entities within the transport function, and there is an actual bill coming through which clearly defines, you know, the role and functions of these boards that operate within that department. And I think they've hit the good medium, because they had a look and researched many of the aspects of how this process should be undertaken. And the RAF bill, which, you know, effectively was one which I think you were part to that as well, was the most arduous task of a portfolio committee ever. Entails something like, you know, going out into the media and asking for nominations with certain competencies, and then having to sift through something like 100 odd applications of these various entities. To the point that, you know, the portfolio committee was sitting, you know, night and day, and I think the current SABC board's interviews is another example of this. I'm basically in favor of, you know, of an open, transparent process, which clearly I think you've more or less defined in, you know, in your opening sort of address about how it should be done. But at the end of the day, we as parliamentarians have an oversight role. And that oversight role, other than through questioning in the parliament, needs to be done through some notification. And I would propose, Chair, that, you know, as far as this Board of Council goes, the first thing would be to obviously allow an open process of, you know, of inviting nomination. Now, I'm not too certain exactly what competency levels in terms of this particular bill is required on that council. But clearly, the way that it's been done in this amendment law is currently in the process of going through the parliamentary process for the transport agency, is that once that's been advertised and those things come in, it's actually the department's role then, together with the HRC, to actually sift through this and to shortlist them. That is an administration process. I think the only thing that I would, you know, ask for, Chair, is that, you know, at least the committee is advised of who those shortlists are, because within that process we would obviously identify with some of those people and know, you know, whether those persons are in the position to do that, whether there's a conflict of interest in terms of their roles in those particular councils, etc. And at least at the end of the day, I think that would be my opinion anyway. And this is how we've approached the transport agencies, well, is to try and see that at least there is something coming back to those portfolio committees or parliament to advise who the nominees are, the shortlisting, and then finally the process at the end of the day, who was elected to do that. And I think if that is covered in this section 5, I think that, you know, we would get quite far to getting some standard processes going, which I think is necessary throughout the board in all various competencies. So that's my suggestion.
Any further input? Before you come, you will not all the input, and you will have the chance to respond. Let me make my input here. You see, Parliament has a role to intervene in the interest of the public. There has been tendency, and probably this is why there are some problems of human resource development in many of our departments with the excuse that apartheid is to blame, even after so many years, since 1994. And once the process, once a parliament is excluded from an oversight role that it's supposed to be, in fact, if we say we oversee entities of the department, or even any portfolio committee overseas, entities of each respective department, and it can't but exercise the role in terms of directing even human resource development, then it becomes a problem. The NRF Act is a very good example. Last time, we made recommendations that were very, very informed. And if we are to oversee an entity, and we know that actually the board that is supposed to direct the affairs of that entity has got unsuitable candidates within its ranks, and things happen because exactly of those unsuitable elements. Now, even before we have to go and question the government. Already we know that this is to be expected because there are these and these people who entered there by virtue of reasons that are very, very unknown to the committee, because we had made relevant recommendations based on some information probably that the committee may possess, because we sit here at the center of the public where we happen to know many things than you may do in your isolated entity as the department. I don't want to make an example of what happened in the appointment of the NRF board, where the committee's recommendation, although it is saying that after consultation with the committee, but the minister never consulted with us. Our recommendation, he just threw them away, never even came to us, never even wrote to us to tell us that, no, by virtue of this reason, I'm appointing this board. I ignore your recommendation. Never. Never even supplied that what finally the board was that you appointed after we had made such a long process here. But over and above, here during that time, we had requested as a committee that we did not want a shortlist, because we were given a shortlist initially. We said we wanted to see exactly how people had been shortlisted, because it's one thing to be given to choose from a narrow pool. And we found that there were some very many names there which were not shortlisted, which did not make sense to us as the committee, why those names were not, and other names which we questioned were put. But nevertheless, the committee altogether was neglected and ignored the recommendations, and that has remained a festering sore until today. And so, if we are really serious about democratizing, if we are really serious about Parliament's oversight role in these affairs, we have to be very open between ourselves or amongst ourselves, that we devise a mechanism that is truly democratic and that really addresses the challenges that we have. Otherwise, it's no use for us sitting here simply to rubber stamp things or to help people that we know that they are not competent to be where they are, and expect that there will be miracles. Now Parliament will have to then do miracles to put things right where actually Parliament long oversaw that there was not going to be progress. So I think a mechanism, in fact, what the HSRCCO suggested last time, I think was very, very brilliant, which is that we have to be consistent. We can't have, you see, like I was mentioning, as you say, there are various ways of appointing these boards. And I do not see why we do not have a standard method of how this process should go about. I am going to raise this matter in the Chairperson's Forum, which is, I think, today, that we have to have some consistency, because then it becomes a mockery if in other departments or committees a certain process is followed, in others I say this process is not followed. Then there is no consistency at all. And I mean, I don't think Parliament can work like that. I think we must have a consistency which is stably known, that it's not about choices, it's about regulation. I think that is my input.
Thanks, Chair. I think much of what you said, or virtually all of what you said, is what we kind of agree with. I think here there's consistency in the way in which we do things is what we should be striving towards. And this is what we've been looking at in terms of when it comes to amending all of our pieces of legislation or legislation of our various science councils, this is what we're trying to achieve. The key reason for going through this process of harmonizing the legislation is to ensure that we get some sort of consistency in what we do. Now, from all the pieces of legislation that our minister has oversight on, the NRF one was the only one that allowed for, or that had specifically as a clause to state that we minister would need to consult with the portfolio committee in the appointment of that, of the board. And therefore, in our process of amending the legislation, we had gone through the thinking and we said, well, let's try to make the NRF consistent with everything else. Hence, we went through that process of removing it because all our other pieces of legislation didn't make any reference to the way in which this should be done. However, we would welcome that process if there's going to be some sort of discussion around how it's being done overall. I mean, I don't think we would be averse to that. But maybe what I should do at this stage is to give the portfolio committee a sense of what we do with our other science councils, the process that we use with regard to appointing those boards. Basically, what we do is to follow the guideline principles that are outlined in the DPSA manual. There's a DPSA manual with regard to appointing of boards in the public sector. It is quite a comprehensive manual, and I know almost all departments are currently following that process. It outlines very clearly that you should put out these adverts in newspapers, which departments do, and quite often, well, it's the minister that would do that with his team, put that out in the paper. When nominations are received, these nominations would be looked at, they will be scrutinized in terms of the specific requirements as outlined in the piece of legislation itself. If the legislation says you need to have somebody with expertise in the financial field, in the legal field, or specific expertise in innovation, for example, or whatever, so those specific requirements are looked at. How is this entire shortlisting process done? In our case, with regard to DST, we put together an advisory panel to assist the minister. Now, this advisory panel will comprise of people, experts in the field, that we are looking at. Quite often the experts would be from higher education institutions. We make sure that there's the various sectors also involved. We would have the industries involved. To a large extent, we would have director generals of other departments that come in and assist with the shortlisting process. So it's a panel that is put together to sit and look at the first pick at all the nominations that come in. The panel deliberates, they will then submit their shortlist to the minister. Now, in that process, we also invite nominations from the Science Council itself, the current board that is there. We would specifically be asking the board with regard to providing us the names of board members that would want to continue. And a lot of that will be based on the board performance reports that the minister receives from the board chairperson. So a lot is taken into account with regard to there is no sense putting a person on a board to serve for a second term when that person is really not adding value on that board. So we take that very seriously. Minister has a closed session with the board chair prior to this process to just find out with regard to performance, as well as minister will be minister receives a written report with regard to performance of board members. So all that is taken into consideration before minister decides on whether a person that's currently on the board should be put on there for the second time. Minister would be taking the advice of his specific advisory panel, and eventually he comes up with a final shortlist, and this is the final shortlist that goes forward to cabinet for cabinet's approval. However, as I said, the only deviation from all of the legislation that we do have was the NRF one, where we were, according to the legislation, expected to bring it in front of the portfolio committee. And I believe in the last round, Minister did do that. However, I do see you are a bit aggrieved, Chair, with regard to the fact that DSC didn't quite follow up and inform you with regard to whether your recommendations were taken or not. But I assure you, this is something that I take back to DST in terms of the way in which we improve on processes. This would be done in future. And this is pretty much the kind of process that we are currently following. So that's the process that we follow with regard to the board. As I said, the NRF and the question that Honorable Ainsley asked with regard to the NRF board, the key reason why we wanted to remove it is because we wanted to achieve consistency. And the other science councils, we don't have such a clause. That is why we had suggested that we would take it out in our next line of amendments. So I don't know if I've sufficiently responded to that, but that's what we currently do.
Just as a brief response to what you have said, I think we as a committee have to think about if first of all, one, we have to have consistency in the appointment of the board. In the appointment of the board that are within the governing sector of the DST. If we agree that we choose the wording as enshrined in the NRF Act, I would recommend that because consultation means exactly consultation. So if the minister has to consult with the committee, then the committee must, I think they should not just bring the shortlist. They can bring the, you can do the shortlisting, it helps the committee, I think, according to the prejudices that have been adopted in the department. But I think it is useful to exactly do as we did last time, that we get the whole list of people like the nominees, so that we can see the short list. If the short list does not overlook probably some of the skills that we may be knowing as a committee for whatever reason that is to the public interest. It may have been left out. So that, because then, you see, if you bring a short list, then you think that choose from these ones, but we do not know why these ones. So it's better that we look at what you have, and then we look at the whole scope, and then we say, well, we think these people are fine. Or we look at the whole scope, and then we say that, but what about this? Because that is exactly consultation. And the minister may say that, no, you see here, I don't think this will be right because of this and this and that. Oh, then it's fine. What about this one? Don't you think can add really this and that and that and that? And the minister says that, no, I don't think so because of this and this and this and that reason. You see, and that is what we call consultation. So when we have agreed as a committee with the minister after consultation, that is what they call consultation. Which never happened last time. So it's just an act, you see. I remember one of the members there was very much disturbed because, in looking in the whole list of nominees, it took us, we who worked faithfully, it took us many nights to read the CV of everybody and see that actually this CV was relevant to what NRF board should be or is supposed to be. And so for that big effort, having been input by a member, to be just thrown like that, it really gave a very disturbing, exercise. So I think, therefore, I don't know, but I think it is important that Parliament itself, not only the committee, must adopt a certain style, by which these boards are going to be. Because the boards are as good as committees of parliament. They are the engines of the department. They are the engines of the entities. And if the boards are haphazardly appointed, then we are not going to see our system moving forward. We are not going to see any improvement. So boards are very, very important. They are the engine of our society because government departments are the engine of our way forward. So if we do not have a well thought of process, then we'll end up nowhere. So I think we have to really think about this. I don't know if there are any members who want to add. Honorable Chairman.
Of course. regarding this issue. I guess like last time, what is not clear to me is why we don't use, you know, the constitutionality to defend resources. Rather, we are using the precedent and not what the constitution says. I think even last time, I think we had the same problem of not using, you know, the constitution and, you know, the guiding principle. Now, I think that what needs to be done. I guess that's where my problem is when it comes to the time debate. I don't think the president, because even the president, because it's also subject to correction if one seems to be, you know, to be wrong. So, and secondly, what I don't understand is why the state law advisors are not here today to speak for themselves, because they were there last time. I wish they could also have a say, because they were there last time, there was this whole issue of debating. And also, when the difference between after consultation and in consultation is was clarified, to the point where, you know, this committee actually said, we need to be guided by the Constitution to strengthen the legislative oversight, you know, that this committee has been given to do. I think that's where my problem is. The honourable still was not there, you know, at the last meeting when the 14 was debated. I think what we said last time was that, you know, it's a simple principle that the committee, you know, should exercise oversight, being over. Should exercise oversight to be over executive. And this is exactly, I think, is what, you know, tension is not about.
You know, there's a number of things that I think one wants to see for arriving out of this process. The first is the constitutional imperative, you know, that clearly must be up front in terms of our oversight role, which I've seen, you know, from the beginning. It can be done in a number of ways. You can either do it through the normal questioning system or, you know, letters to decide for yourself whether, in fact, the person is compliant or something. Or you're going to a long stream of action laying down the exact competencies that you require them for and make sure that they with whatever the comes out. And the third thing is obviously that you ensure that it is broadened on the basis of, you know, of access. And, you know, when you talk about a transparent and fair process, it's got to be seen to be not only media oriented. A lot of people don't even get newspapers in some places, you know, so one has to be ensured that. Now, in many of the legislations relating to board appointments that I've been involved in, you can't spell that out. You know, if you really want to, you can go in and you put it in the legislation. You can say, this is what we are looking for, specifically these skills, and X, Y, and Z. And then you appoint according to that in terms of the numbers that you have, that you find the link. The second thing then, in terms of the constitutional aspects of oversight, is to ensure that this committee is aware of all those things, because outside of the normal process of selection, you also have personal knowledge. As the chairperson has said, I know that, you know, but hang on, you know, he is involved in some fraud charge somewhere along the line, and yet it doesn't come through in the process of you know, and you would be able to contribute to this whole process that way. So that is the other thing. And then the last but not least issue here is that, you know, at the end of the day, the budget for this thing is accountable to this particular parliament. Now, I don't see any way that you manage to put in and include somebody who is accountable in the department for this particular purpose. Now, there should be an ex officio role here played by every department in every board. And, you know, it's failed in other places where they've not been. for the simple reason that decisions get taken which might not be in line with particular policies of government. So, you know, an ex officio role here must be imperative. Otherwise, you're going to lose sight and keep in touch with what's going on there and who's doing what, whether that board is in fact doing what it's supposed to do. The chair pointed out, you know, I think, or someone, that there was a problem of ensuring that there's going to be a board that is actually going to do what it's meant to end up doing and that they actually attend meetings. You look at annual reports through every board that comes through and, you know, you see just the minimum attendance at boards. That is not what it's about. And I think where the department must play a role is ensuring that that is in fact reported on adequately to the minister, so any changes that need to take place in that process are necessary. I just want to correct something, Chair. When I was referring to the RAF board and the fact that we... I was actually referring to another board in transport, and I've given you an example where the portfolio committee got involved in that process of interviewing. It was a nightmare. A, getting continuity of members to be present on that interviewing panel throughout the whole interview process. You cannot exclude anybody and say that, look, we're not going to interview. Because, you know, if someone advertises for the process, at the end of the day, you've got to go through and you can sift those that don't comply easy. But at the end of the day, you've got to actually sit and interview them. And, you know, when it goes into an open and transparent manner, specified here, it means that anybody can be nominated across the whole country. And you want people to try and, you know, do that. But it is a nightmare, believe me. I've been through that. And we weren't able to get continuity of membership through that process. Some people said, well, you know, how can you make comments on this person when you weren't at the meet, at the first interview, and so it goes on. I really think that what I was trying to stress there, and maybe Roy got me wrong, is that is an administration function which actually effectively the department and the particular board that there would be possible, you know. And then you bring it back in a form that at least is transparent, that as you say, Jim, you have the whole list of everybody. And here is the shortest next to this. And, you know, you can then determine whether, in fact, the committee or the panel that you've nominated has done a good job or a bad job. And we can, as a portfolio committee, then contribute to that level. So I just wanted to correct that. I don't think you meant that we should interview all those people, because it is not on our promise.
Yeah, I think just as an input, I think Honorable was meaning that which was a center of long debate during last time here in our last session of it, that we would prefer as a committee, not after consultation, because as you said, as we have experienced, that after consultation is almost useless. Yet it makes you, I mean, spend all the effort, the nights, trying to do the job correctly as constitution demands, and then and at the end of the day, it becomes a useless exercise. You see, whereas the method that I'm saying, which still does not interfere much with the department, and in fact, it seeks a very optimal interplay between the department and the committee, which is that the department, it is their administrative role to run the process of nomination, to shortlist, but if it is in consultation with us, it can't be after consultation, because already we have an experience that it has not worked, you see. It should be in consultation. And this, I am saying, I want to take it further, even, to the chairperson's forum, because there must be consistency. It can't be just one committee when others are not doing it, because we should find consistency. I am going to take it to many other levels where this is appropriate. But the reality is that if we are really serious about democracy, we must establish the thing without looking into our narrow interest. We must look into the democracy exactly as how it should be exercised. And if we are saying that constitutionally, Parliament has a role in directing the government direction in the public interest, then it means that we have to be hands-on in terms of oversight function that constitution really empowers us to do. And boards of different entities and departments are the real engines of government direction. In fact, just recently there has been a very, very interesting controversial issue having been picked up by SCOPA. SCOPA picked up, and that is exactly, I'm sure that would not have happened if there was a consistent way of Parliament dealing, I mean, having the real hands-on oversight role over the appointment of board. You have people, actually, who have syndicated themselves. And they know that this department it has got a link with that and that and that one. And so they will be in all those boards. 22 boards, one person. Do you think that it is democracy? It can't. It can't. And it is because the appointment of those boards have got a deficit, and which parliament must correct. And you find that, therefore, if I know that MinTech deals with minerals, and there is also the Council for Geoscience deals with the exploration of where the mineral wealth is. So, if I have interest, so I will be in the board of your council, I'll be in the board of MinTech, I'll be in the board of ESCO, I'll be in the board, you see. And at the end, so I know that whatever is discussed there, I'm there to safeguard my interest. And that is exactly what comes out of this process, where we say that, let us leave it to an executive. The executives are not the state. They are entrusted by us. And they have to be helped by us to do the correct things. You see. So I think that is exactly what we have to do. Now, I don't think that you must debate these issues now. But I'll allow you. Can you summarize, because I think we shouldn't waste time on things that we've already discussed. What are you saying? What is your proposal here? Because members of government, they would like to see that the act is streamlined such that it's in consultation with, but in saying in consultation, they are not meaning that members should interview anybody. That's what the members have said there. So what else are you saying if we're not saying that? I don't think any of us are lawyers. I think we must allow the state law advisor to intervene. Can you advise us on that?
Thanks, Chair. I think this the issue under debate here is about consultation. Our advice can only be to explain what's in consultation and after consultation means. And I've not been listening to the debate here. But I think in the process, I want to agree with the Honorable Speaker. Because you may think that you want after consultation, or you want in consultation, at the end you find that your procedure is after consultation. The Honorable Speaker, the Honorable Member, Mr. Stewart, mentioned that there should be an administrative rule, which I think, if perhaps it could be left with the people who could pick the panel. I think the problem here is whether or not this committee is going to be part or is going to be involved, because it looks like there's a fear of something that happened before. Maybe if they are given a chance, we don't know if this committee might not be involved, if the administration or the administrative role is given to the people too. Consultation here, both, but I hear that everybody agrees with consultation. But the problem is, when should it take place? And this consultation, the key words are that it should be transparent and open. Which I think, if these people are given a chance, whoever is supposed to deal with that administrative problem, it might come up transparent and you might be happy. The only thing is that it must be transparent. And if you can forget about what happened in the past and see what the Honorable Member, Mr. Stewart, was saying, I'm sure everybody would be happy. Because the truth of the matter is that nobody must encroach on the territory of the other. Like the member and the CEO have said. I've got a case also over and above that of Van Rooyen and others that have stated this year's case. If maybe you can go through it. I had the member wanting to say the references and stuff. But I think for me it's important for administration to give any probe and then you have the oversight and see what they come up with. For us, it's not for us to debate, but to just put things as they are and the committee decides. Otherwise, in consultation is after consultation, I'm reminded they are both constitutional issues. All those cases that are discussed here, none of them has been said it's unconstitutional, and they're both in and after consultation.
Can you allow me to just respond? You see, that is why I have raised the point that we need to have some consensus in doing this. As Honorable Tshabe said, before this committee became separate from the broader committee which has Arts, Culture, Science and Technology, we did have a precedence where we were tasked with appointment of the board. And I do not know which example the table was referring to, but during the one that I can remember for after I joined Parliament was one of arts cancer, and in that one it was a thorough process which was in consultation. We even shortlisted the names we were given, the pile of nominees we were to shortlist, and each of us had went home with this and we took that. It was a very difficult exercise, as the paper was saying, just to sit down and do it. We then shortlisted people, I mean, we came with, each member came with a shortlist of his or her own, and we put them as an augmented shortlist, and we then put it together to get it shortlist as was required by the department, and then agreed as a committee that this was a shortlist of all of us that we compromised on, and then we sent it to the department. And so the arts council was. Then the minister had then to appoint them according to that, and that was in consultation. This is even different from what happened in the NRF Act, because in the NRF Act, inside the minister, he is the shortlisting himself. All that we required, when he brought in that shortlist, we said, we just want to see the whole list of the nominees from whom these people were shortlisted. And after looking through, then we made recommendations. And in fact, we didn't even change them. We just added, we just changed two names and added some very relevant names with motivation. And so then it all disappeared. So I'm trying to say that, therefore, these were two processes all coming from one and the same department, you see. Of course, coming from now the new department, GST, but before it was from ACT, which is ACT, Research and Technology. So we have had these things. That is why it is very important, as an honorable minister said, that to rush the legislation sometimes does not pay off. Afterwards, then you are haunted by the consequences. So, if we agree that we do not want, mind you, there is nobody with particular interest. We are simply exercising what we think that are supposed to be parliamentary duties. If anybody feels that no, if we agree that it is wrong to do anything, let's leave administration thing for administration. Our role is oversight. When they will have formed their structures, we must then look at them as we are doing with all other entities. Then it's so be it. So be it. You see. But if we are saying that we are really serious, we want to add value into the direction of our science system, we must find a really orderly fashion of doing that. We can't just be trial and error method.
But I think
That is exactly my point, that you can't have a situation where we may as well simply forget about oversight if people come with all the technical issues. In fact, we can research that, and I mean, we have in evidence here, in front of us, the Communications Committee is doing, in fact, what is really, what Mr. Faro is talking about, which is really real administrative role rather than an oversight role. But yeah, we're not talking about it because that is not what we've done in our committee ever since I came to this parliament, even where the process was a little bit more rigorous than what Honorable Chitebe is suggesting, you see. Now, I am saying that, be it as it may, this committee has a role as a parliamentary committee to see to it that if we are to do oversight, if we feel that there are gaps there, we can, in fact, we can do anything, including initiating legislation, which empowers us to do that. We are parliament. We are there to act for the people. So there's nobody who can come and ask and say that we can't do that. We have to do it constitutionally. The oversight role is the function of parliament. It is the manner in which parliament can do it. Actually, some members of the executive do in fact stress that parliament has, we are not know all. We have to be assisted by parliament. We are there to assist us. If we take decisions, we are informed by the environment in which we are, but if you feel as parliament that there are some other things, input that may assist us, that should be so be it. The finance minister has clearly stated that in a number of times, you see. And so I do not know why we are really having to debate this thing unless if people have discussed things before this, probably in other platforms and agreed that it should be debated. Honorable Nyambi.
Thank you, Chair. I think part of what has been taken by Roy and your explanation. But be it as it may, my feeling is that perhaps, I mean, between last week, you know, when we debated this issue, and today, I have a feeling that perhaps we should have had a chance to
you know, to discuss this. I'm really not comfortable with the way we're discussing, democratic as it may be, so that perhaps we could come up with some kind of collective understanding if there are glitches or anything of that sort, some kind of, you know, collective understanding of what we all of the position that we want to put forward. Of course, I'm saying that with the full understanding that it seems that the comrade Silo is the only one who seems to be deviating from, you know, the discussion we had last week and what is happening here. Number two, I think my
probably that is why we did not find reason to do that, because last week we exhausted this, but we discussed these matters, and that is why we assigned the Department of Law and the State Law Advisor and discussed these matters. Unfortunately, the Honourable Representative wasn't there. That is why he is initiating the debate now afresh. And that is why we thought that we were coming here simply to listen to the input of the department and how they resolve the matter. And as the CTG has shown, they came out with a number of these different models, and which model, as I said, in fact, it arose also out of last week where the CEO said that it would be better if we are consistent in adopting a style of appointing the board. It should be for all, it shouldn't be for one entity and other entities of a different style, which made sense, and that is exactly what we have been trying to input, but now we've been taken back, unfortunately. Then this matter now is totally delayed and progress.
Chair, I was going to say, secondly, I was going to comment on my understanding of this clause, although we have, I think it would seem as if we are going too much with it. My understanding is that one clause, after consultation, perhaps does have a connotation of leaving things too much to chance. I think what this committee is trying to do is not leaving things to chance, but to make sure that, you know, that it's not, I don't think the committee is interested in the processes of, you know, taking out publication of nominations and those kinds of things. But it does want to make sure that at least it doesn't leave things to chance. That, as we have correctly said, right from the beginning, it has a say, you know, in the operation of things.
I think she was first. Okay, let's listen to her first before maybe.
Well, maybe I don't know if this will help a little. Maybe in your discussion with the chairperson, one of the ways in which one could look at trying to bring some sort of consistency into the entire thing would be if members of the portfolio committee ask to be, it doesn't have to be the entire set of portfolio committee members, but one or two members that are elected to serve on these advisory panels. So they can be involved with the advisory panel quite early in the process. I don't know if that is going to help in terms of involvement, rather than the portfolio committee running the entire process on their own.
I don't think that will work because there are various opinions. The portfolio committee is consists of a variety of people.
This is where, Chair, I think the in-consultation also becomes problematic, because if portfolio committee members themselves do not agree on a shortlist, on all the candidates on the shortlist, because in-consultation simply means that all parties need to agree on all names that are on that list. This can take anything from a few weeks to a few months, and the board can run into problems where we would have a situation at the Science Council that we don't have a board in place because we are taking far too long to agree with each other on each and every name that exists on that shortlist. And I think this is also another issue that we have to be very wary of when we choose in consultation. Because it simply means minister has to agree and each and every portfolio committee member has to agree with those names. I mean, I think this needs to be considered.
I don't know, but as I'm saying, we are talking about things that have happened, and actually they are in practice now been the communication is conducted, which is even a more tedious process. But that is not what has been happening in our committee since it was still even an augmented committee of arts and culture, science and technology. We have had the last one of NRF board, it never took many days, and we finalized that list, and it was agreed by all of us, those names that we recommended. But nevertheless, I do take a point that it can be a process, and this is why we need to finalize these issues amongst ourselves if we feel that what we thought was going to happen last time is supposed to be re-looking.
Ins and outs of the wording of after. I'm personally in favour of the after consultation for purely a lot of the things that have been mentioned here about the timing and and the availability. But there's a way of actually ensuring that we as a portfolio committee are ensured that the right people are on the board in terms of the particular roles we want them to play. And that's why I raised this issue. Because what we have found in other boards like this is that if you spell out more specifically the competency levels that are required, okay, in broader terms or in specific terms, depending on how it is, and it goes into the media or whatever it means of trying to get accessibility to the particular incumbent, you're immediately giving us now some more or narrowing down the problems that could arise out of numerous particular applications. In effect, it's a way of automatically shortlisting, ensuring that you get the right people. So by virtue of that process, you're going to, we've got the checks and balances. That's what I meant, in broad. The other thing then would be that having done that, you can also then look at ensuring that, in broader terms, where there are members of the board needed, that they, in effect, have got the interests of that particular, competency in mind, in terms of governance and the financial aspects, which are more generalist as opposed to specific skills. So I really believe that, we can do that by virtue of spelling out the process more clearly. If you talk about, as in section 5.3, that you appoint the members contemplated, the minister appoints contemplated in 2B in the prescribed, which must be transparent and fair. We would not know if it was transparent or fair unless we could see in either a government gazette or in some media that this advertising process had in fact happened and that we could be satisfied to hear that gone as broad as it could. So that is, we need to spell that out. In other boards, they actually say by advertising in newspapers of national, TV, it might even be TV, radio, whatever. We will decide on that. But I think you need to look at broadening that. And it's going to cut down the problems that might happen in terms of our oversight role here and worried about whether this took place. And the same thing can happen.
If you say broadening is general.
It just says in a transparent and fair way. What is it? We would have to be given significant proof that takes place. And in other boards where I've had this, we've actually specified there that this should be in accordance with the government gazette or other medias which we could specify in a particular area. So, you can actually get that out of previous legislation and spell it out. And that would take away any fears or, problems that we might have as to whether that process happened, because you can actually refer to that and it can be taken. Then, as far as the actual representation on the board is concerned, you could again go and discuss the competency levels that you need there. Bearing in mind the generalists for good governance and finance, but I mean, there's got to be certain skills there. They talk about distinguishing themselves in the field of human science. Well, let's be specific about that. In what field of human science do we want those people to be represented in the board? The special position, special qualifications, what? And I'm just sort of going through this in terms of this section 5. I think if it was broadened, and then you had, after consultation, a lot of the problems that would be inherently there, sitting there, would be out of the way. Clear. It's just my impression, and I think that, to make it less cumbersome of having to go, as you say, through this, and the time constraints also would make it very very difficult for this, I'm sure. So you might have a different discipline in your committee, but I promise you, this is exactly why we had to go to the General Amendments Bill in the transport entities. There's 13 of them, and every one of them is run differently. Every one of these boards are at different times. It's chaotic, it's actually, because as one board's expired, another one is done, and there's no boards, and then there's no accountability. So, yes, I think it's got to be after consultation as a process, providing that you get satisfaction out of Section 5 that it's actually very specific there as to what the incumbent's going to be, where, what their responsibilities are, and whether, in fact, it has been a transparent and fair process. And if that spells out, we have got checks and balances there we can automatically go to in legislation to deal with. But anyway, I think there's a basis a long way before me, but I'm just coming in late.
Quick response, please, Chair, on that one. We're very aware of that in terms of setting out clearly what needs to happen, how it needs to happen. And that generally comes in the accompanying regulations that are developed. In fact, if you look at our other science council legislation, the issues of, okay, it should be at least in two national newspapers, for example. You know, in terms of what specific competencies are being looked for, those are also clearly stated. So in that way, we try to overcome that kind of issue that we just leave it out too broadly.
That argument, sorry, Chair, I'm taking advantage. We don't see regulation. The minister regulates. So effectively, it goes around the process. It's got to be in the law, and it gets spelled out there. Then there's no argument. Regulations are something ministers can do, and power to do. And, despite regulations that you talk about that might be in the public services manual, the fact is we've got to see it here, because it's not for me and for you, it's for the people down there. And there.
Well,
Chairman,
I don't think regulations are prerogatives of ministers to meet up the act. So I don't think that we can use that here when we are constructing a bill, because we must just leave that one out. And here when we construct a bill, it should be the bill, and the minister then can meet up it with the regulations, proper regulations.
If we're looking forward to quite a weighty, quite a heavy bill, then it's fine. We put it into the bill, because I don't think that's a...
I'd like to have just an aspect, because today we've got new people. I want to understand that this is a parliamentary law advisor, also from the law advice office. Can you comment what to say? Introduce yourself, because we don't know you.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Koneka. As a single receiver, it's actually her committee, Ms. Makabate. My name is Koneka Benja. Yes. So I'm assisting Ms. Makabate because she's caught up in another meeting. I just got the discussion halfway through that from what I gathered, there's a disagreement, if I can put it that way, with regards to the use of after consultation and in consultation. And I just quote a little bit of the argument, I assume they're from the department, that if we use in consultation, it's going to be time-consuming, and all the parties need to agree. And there was a suggestion that maybe the committee should appoint one or two members to sit on that advisory panel, as opposed to having the whole portfolio committee running the entire program. And my comment is, honestly, just around that. The way the committee operates, and it operates in terms of the rules of the National Assembly, and you find that there's a criteria. Where I'm going with my argument is that I don't see a problem of disagreement within. I understand that the committee represents different interests, different parties, but there is a procedure in place that is followed, whereby the committee, a manner in which the committee takes decisions on how to run things, on how to oversee matters, because the committee has that in the constitution. It's obliged by the constitution to oversee. There are certain sections of the constitution, like section 92, to the committee, the parliamentary committee, to oversee the work of the executive. And again, in terms of the rules, I mean, it wouldn't serve that much of a difference to have the committee appointing one or two people serving on that board. Because the committee, when it takes its decision, there is a certain manner in accordance with Rule 202 of the National Assembly rules, whereby which determines the procedure on how the committee may take its decision. So whatever decision that the committee will take with regard to the operation of the bill, it will be a collective decision of the committee. So maybe having one or two members serving or serving on the advisory council of the minister, those one or two members will be carrying the mandate of the portfolio committee. It would have been discussed by the committee. And the rule 202 of the National Assembly rules, set clear the procedure of taking decisions by the committee. So in any event, the committee will have to deliberate. It will have to take time. It will have to be a process, because the members of the committee represent a different interest group. And maybe those one or two members will just be carrying on the money to the committee, not to say that they will be negotiating a different direction opposed to what the committee decided on. But, well, this is my comment will just be around that, because I didn't get the whole gist of the argument. But honestly, this is a constitutional mandate, and something that comes out of the rules that the committee has to do to oversee, to make sure that members of the cabinet and the executive is accountable collectively and individually to parliament. Section 92 of the constitution states that the members of the cabinet must be accountable collectively and individually to parliament. Section 42(3), when describing the responsibilities of the National Assembly or the parliament, it says that its responsibility towards the people of the republic. It is a national forum for consideration of public issues by passing legislation and by scrutinizing and overseeing executive action. So that is a constitutional mandate, that is a constitutional obligation that the portfolio committee has to oversee executive action, to scrutinize and oversee executive action. And the way in which decisions are taken in these committees, there are rules. There are rules in place in which the committees abide by. Thank you, Chair.
After that, it was the plunge.
Thank you.
alternative to regulation, and I agree with the minister that takes that approach. But remember that all the regulations derive from the legislation itself. It cannot be regulations about something else that is unrelated to this. Lastly, our own constitution, on this question of transparency, says we live in an open and democratic society. So concepts of transparency, openness are not foreign. They are stated in very broad terms in the Constitution. And if we search much further, we will find that, in fact, what, for instance, the Public Service Commission is doing, the Public Access Information Act is doing, which applies between the Human Rights Commission, etc. All of that is part and parcel of the story that, in fact, is not. So I don't think that. And of course, we might not be in a position now to spell it out that this is how it should be. But let us reach it for the sake of course, that taking into account the reservations that have been expressed and so on, whatever further amendments are proposed will be with a view to ensuring that the role of this committee is very clearly spelled out. But that the committee does not envisage a situation where it acts in consultation with the minister, because the net effect of that will be, if he does not agree, there will be no movement forward. We will see, he can't discuss it in any other way. That is exactly the net effect of the frame in consultation. Because then, if you want something else, if you say, no, you just want to try to the whole process, then that must be free competition. It must not be after competition. But again, it does not mean you water down the role of the committee. Ensuring accountability over time will still be things that we achieve and are capable of achieving. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we as lawmakers should make a law so that the officials having to administer that law can do it without us. And we have now been wrestling for 2 hours on this one clause which we should not have been wrestling on. I believe that we should, or that you should, together with the chairpersons of other committees, sit down and say to the Department of Public Administration, come up with something that can be written into law so that we have one regulation or rule that we apply whenever we elect boards, so that every department knows what it wants. I've been sitting in Parliament for many years, and if this discussion has gone on in the Transport Department and in all the other departments, can you imagine how many hours and days we as members of Parliament have spent on one clause that we need to finalize now. And we've been at this for 13, 14 years now. So I would propose that at least we give you the instruction to go to the chairperson to the chair of chairs and get that committee to talk to public administration, come up with a regulation on what to put in a bill of this nature. Finally, that's going to be it. And therefore, sir, I want to refer to, maybe if we want to tie up what we're trying to do, we should perhaps have looked at what happened in the Transport Department. The minister may appoint a person as a member, and I'm quoting from that bill. Only if the minister is satisfied that the person has suitable experience in one or more of the following: international shipping, domestic shipping, maritime law, and so that list carries on. So if there's something that we want this particular board member to have behind him when we appoint him, I think we must write it into the board. Finalize and then we can check it. And then it can be left up to the administration to do the job, because they will have the application and they will have to listen. Does it comply with what is written in the law or not? And that's it. And I think this is why, Mr. Chairman, I think this is about the third meeting where we are discussing after consultation or in consultation. And I'm in favor of after consultation and it will require any move to be written into the law, retroactive into the law, and finalized.
You wanted to have an input there?
No, actually, I just wanted to make a follow-up on what Honorable Tebe, you know, was saying. I wanted actually to repeat what I said. You know, my understanding of these two clauses that after consultation means leaving things to chance. In consultation, for me, that's my own understanding. It makes sure that the committee has a say right from the beginning. I just wanted to clarify that. And therefore, if in consultation, he's going to empower the committee to do exactly what I'm saying, to exercise fully its oversight role, I'll go with it, you know, then, you know, going for after consultation. So I'm just responding because he said we seem to be on the same wavelength in terms of what we are saying, you know, in our understanding of these two clauses.
Ngobo and Professor, you seem to be quiet. You don't have anything to say into these debates. So open the microphone then.
I'm a little bit shocked at the backwards and forwards that we go. You see, I'm not so sure that there's that much difference between the various things. I'm perfectly happy that if a committee has met and decide on a list, and the minister choose from that list, let's say, a list of 15 people, which the minister will choose 10, then so be it. I really don't want to debate it beyond that.
Honorable Ngobo, do you have any input? I want everybody to participate in legislation. We need everybody to have a weight. I see there are many things bringing up now. I joked in the morning when I met the CEO, as I said, it's going to be a hot day. I was thinking that it was going to be the lightest day. It has turned out to be the hottest day. I think it is very important because I remember there was she found out last week whether she should cover that. Well, we will be finalizing our legislation. It is to our interest to be there, if at all. And I thought that we'll be finalizing it, but mainly we've got okay, let me hear other voices. I think let's consult as far as possible. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think what I'm going to say is possibly what my honorable colleague is going to say as well.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wish to quote from the case referred to earlier by Ms. Sangoni, the case of Anroy and what is meant by in consultation and after consultation. The Honorable Judge says here the meaning of the phrase is in consultation with and after consultation with are now well established. In consultation with requires the concurrence of the other functionary or person, and if a body of persons, that concurrence must be expressed in accordance with its own decision-making procedure. I think this alludes to what has been said also before by my honorable colleague beside. The judge also continues to say, after consultation with, requires that the decision be taken in good faith after consulting and giving serious counteraction to the views of the other functionary or person. Thank you.
I think that is a very full input.
I just want to respond to the question or the query by the two honorable members about the constitutionality of these phrases. Like he said, these are just phrases that are well established in consultation and after consultation, and they have not been seen as being unconstitutional. They have nothing to do with constitutionality. It's just a way of the procedure that we do choose to take. They have nothing to do with constitutionality. They are both constitutional. Thank you.
Yeah. Which, you know, in the beginning I mentioned, that was the role and functionary of the department in these boards. Whether everybody would think that it would be a good idea to have that or not, because this has been an inclusion that we found very important because of the policy direction that those incumbents in the bureaucracy, so to speak, have offered to these boards. And ensuring that there's a golden thread that's maintained there. Otherwise, some of these boards can go off at a tangent. It also has then a role of accountability in terms of the department's financing of it, if it is financed as such or whatever, and how the recovery, if it is a recovery in those agencies, are used in the best interest of the objectives of the Act or the Bill. And I just wanted to find out whether, from the department, whether they do that in an ex officio manner anyway, or whether they need to write it into the legal process here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your question. Thanks, thank you, Honourable Chair. Yes, there's a number of mechanisms that the DST has put in place with regard to the oversight of the governance issues in board. Just very recently, we have established forums. We would have a chairperson's forum, a CEO's forum, and CFO's forum, something that's introduced and is running very well at the moment. Even though we have 3A public entities reporting to us, and by treasury regulations, 3A public entities are not necessary, it's not necessary for them to enter into shareholder compacts with the executive authority. As a DST, you know, we've decided this is good governance. Let's enter into shareholder compacts with the 3A public entities. In other words, the minister enters into the shareholder compact with the chairperson of the board in terms of saying this is what you will deliver, you and your board will deliver, and this is what DST expects of you. So we've put a number of things in place to ensure the good governance with regard to the board. In terms of your question around having an ex officio member of DST, we do have instances where you would have individuals probably in observer status that would attend some of these meetings and we get feedback. But there's very tight mechanisms in place for feedback from board meetings and so forth. I don't know if that answers what...
But before you make any input, it's on. There have been two inputs that support each other from Professor and from Honorable Beatrice Globe. That why don't the committee just have the names and it gives a short list then from which the minister should. That process would be what? That is a process in consultation. Because then if it is the committee which is going to then do shortlisting, then it becomes the in consultation and not after consultation. I think that it still comes back to what I said. We can agree here that either we process this legislation for the sake of expediency, or I take the matter up to discuss at the chairperson's forum as to this particular problem, or we establish our own mode of operation, which is constitutionally compliant, which is what we want the process to be, and what we want actually, what we expect also the process to be in terms of constitution and parliament versus executive interaction, which may be the thing that I have to raise, which is exactly what I will be raising in our forum about the consistency of this appointment, because we have this already on running process with communications, the committee appointing the SABC board, and it's a clearly detailed administrative exercise. Even myself, I don't feel that it's a correct process. I think that the process must be done, administratively speaking, by the department, advertising, doing that for parliament. I do agree that we have to have an act in the bill. We must specific, our bill must be specific of what we want, because then we know that this is bad. Still, I do not also agree with the two gentlemen that that in the bill then is enough for our oversight role, because there are peculiarities in this society. I speak as a scientist, because you may think that you know that actually we live in three-dimensional space, only to find that actually we live in 3.5 with time to discover something new. And you may think that you have put everything in place in the legislation, only to find that in place it's not all. Then there comes a peculiarity which was never thought of. And what do you do? So that is why it is very, very important to leave the possibility of a hands-on or pragmatic solution to problems, which is what exactly the function of the committee is supposed to be. That is to interact in the process and ensure that the process is transparent, and to ensure that we achieve the results that we expect. Now, if we leave that, the paper will look for us, I mean, will look after our interest in the form of the legislation that we have incorporated all the clauses. With time, we'll find that those clauses have got dual meaning. And so other people, they use that, actually, to overrun, you see. Exactly. So it is very important to allow physical interaction of beings in the committee with the particular entity, so that we ensure that the process remains what we wanted it to be.
I didn't for 1 minute want to try and spell out, you know, everybody's role for that specific purpose, but I'm just giving examples of how you can bring into legislation a process which gives you the opportunity of having the checks and balances if they're in the legislation. And hence, you know, I raised the question about whether there should be included in that board a ex officio member. Because if the forum that exists of the three entities that fall under the science and technology are meeting, it's sometimes important also to have a feel of whether what's been said in board meetings are actually related to what in fact is broadly speaking the ministry's policy. And for that reason, then I said, you know, that if the incumbent is actually included, there's a bigger, greater sense of accountability in terms of reporting back here. And secondly, the other thing would be then, you mentioned it, not me, that there should be effectively then a performance agreement that we could actually judge how that board is going. And usually that is another way of actually incorporating this detail, you know, which becomes, as you say, it might end up with another page of legislation, but at the end of the day, it gives some sort of means, a tool for us as legislators then to actually go and see whether, A, the performance agreement has been met with, B, that, you know, that the levels that are there in terms of what they're trying to achieve in terms of policy has been channeled correctly. So that's my next sort of thinking now then, you know, that if one isn't there, is the performance agreement going to be entrenched in this legislation? Because it has to be there, as in the other ones there. And I think you'll find when you talk to the other chairpersons, Chair, that we've gone through this experience in these entities, you know, where they were doing their own thing. And at the end of the day, we had no handle on what was happening there, particularly since a lot of them were being self-financing, you know. You know, you then don't have the purse string in your hand. And in these other entities here, we've insisted that if the ex officio role is not going to be seen to be part and parcel of that board, then a performance agreement must be entrenched in the legislation, as they've done in these entities here for the General Laws Amendment Act for Transport. So I'm just saying that, you know, it's fine having it on a piece of paper down there. If it's in here, we can deal with it. If it's outside and it's between the board and the spot, we'll never see it.
Thanks, Chairperson. I've been listening to the debate with great interest, because at the end of the day, the HSRC is going to be affected one way or the other. As regards the question of accountability of the board, you know, to Parliament, I must say at the moment, the shareholder compact that we have forms the basis for our report to Parliament and to the Minister. When we report on the annual report, you will see that there is a section there on whether did we deliver what we said we're going to deliver, and that is normally audited by the Auditor General in terms of performance. So from that point of view, I do believe that the shareholder compact is sufficiently entrenched in the way in which the HSRC is functioning. Now, should we, in addition to that, have someone else as an ex officio member of the board by virtue of the fact that they are a member of Parliament and representing this particular committee? It may be very hard for anyone to accept to become the chair of the board of the HSRC if they feel at every moment there is someone who's actually interpreting everything they are doing as to whether is it in line with Parliament or not. I would see many members of the board not wanting to serve on the board. I would see no chair being interested.
I think he said the member of the department, not
Parliament. Well, even if it was a member of the department, I would see it would be very difficult, you know, for the chair of the board to want to act, because for whatever it is they are doing, they would feel that that person is going to be reporting to the minister. But if you set up the systems as you have them in so far as the shareholders context, and it's signed every year, and on a quarterly basis, the minister writes back to the HSRC to say, I see you have accomplished this, but you seem to have difficulty here. That any chair of the board would be comfortable with, because it's a mechanism that is both tried and tested in terms of its transparency and in terms of its allowing that accountability to take place in a way that would be comfortable on both sides. Thank you, Chairperson.
I think also I suppose you see, once we put people to monitor things, then it becomes a little bit untidy, you see, or suspicious whether those people are able to carry on their duties. As long as there are mechanisms to monitor whether they have executed their duties faithfully and to the letter of the Act and the Constitution, I think that is enough. I wouldn't want, for instance, that when we meet at the committee, always the Speaker must have a representative who is looking at whether we are really doing exactly what we are supposed to do, because then it means that the Speaker has no confidence in us as a committee. So I think I take the point. We must leave the offices that we create with honor and dignity that we impart to them. And so I wouldn't want you actually that close to be there myself. The ex official testing, I think, must create mechanisms, but to ensure that what we expect is what we indeed produce. Insofar as I am concerned now is that we have not arrived to the conclusion which has to finalize this legislation in terms of consultation. And I think we must wind up that. I'm giving direction now that let us wind up that whether we leave it as after consultation pending what the outcome or the long-term outcome would be afterwards. Because actually today we are discussing in the Chairperson's Forum actually legislation in the office. And so it is a very appropriate occasion to raise some of these questions that we have raised here today. So I therefore want us to try and wind up and agree with the type of unanimity what we want exactly to do in terms of this legislation. Well, because I think the only problem is this consultation. Honorable.
Although my mind is not
Forgive me if maybe I'm just delaying the committee. I'm not sure how my colleague is responsible for this committee has been involved. But I'm going to start by saying that we cannot separate the work that the committee does from its constitutional obligations, as the chairperson and the honorable member said, referring to the checks and balances and the responsibilities of Parliament. But I'm going to be forward, excuse me, chairperson. There is authority, as the gentleman sitting over there quoted from the fund lawyer. And with, just like any other judgment elicits discussion. Unfortunately, this committee has been one that has been bold enough to discuss after consultation. Why is this discussion? There is reason for discussion. It might not have been, I see examples in the consultation has examples of after consultation where you have been used in various pieces of legislation. But why is there this discussion that has lasted for more than two hours? There is reason for discussion. And as I'm sitting here acting for the interest of Parliament, I want the question that's on my mind. I'll admit I haven't been involved in the committee and didn't have enough to read the case. But the question that's in my mind is, what are the effects using after consultation or in consultation? At the back of my mind, I do have the decision and the meaning according to those words by the decision. But again, what I'm grappling with is, what are the effects for the committee? Because, again, I repeat, this is being discussed for 2 hours. And there is reason why this is being discussed for 2 hours. It is not just for fun. So, what maybe we need to do, or the committee needs to apply ourselves and our minds to, is what level of participation does the committee want? How far does the committee want to be involved in the process? You made an example, Chairperson, of the SABC interview. We need to. The honourable member, speaking of the chairperson, made an example of he said something about research, about further research and further reading. I don't know how much time the committee has. But again, just reiterating my point, we need to look at the effect. The fact that this matter is affected, the court has pronounced itself, and various pieces of legislation used after consultation as opposed to in consultation, it doesn't mean that we have to follow it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this discussion. We need to look at the effect and really and seriously apply our minds of choosing between the two legislations. I have that case, I have the decision, and I have the meaning at the back of my mind. That we need to consider the effect and the level of involvement that the committee wants in with regard to this matter.
Why don't you leave? I think if we can postpone this discussion after, I think it will give people some opportunity again of repeating some of these debated issues. And we leave it for the 4th September, because that is the time when we're supposed to finalize the other day, which are supposed to be, of course, today. And because then we will be in a good position, because I will have also gone to the Chairperson's Forum today, and I will have had an input from that forum, which may be very useful. So that when we come next time, which is next week in fact, next Tuesday, then we may be in a way, actually, if I can just, I've had some questions here as to what time do we have to process this bill. We had aimed to finalize this initially by today, so that on the 11th already the program committee there said that they want to put it on the debate in the chamber for passing to the NOP. So the 11th of September was already tentatively put that if we can finalize this in good time, then we can have it put behind us before we finish the term, which was very good for us. But all the same, we cannot process legislation for the sake of time. We need to incorporate all the things that will be the haunting consequences of our future generation. So we've got to be sure that we put in the legislation process something that is meaningful. We don't just rush it. Well, the problem is that suppose this minister is faithful, but what about the next minister? When we talk about the after consultation, that has with the middle acting good faith. So because when we process legislation, you must not only think about the term of office during our time. You think of the term of... Sorry?
Yeah, taking this
see. So it's very important that this reminder that you must always protect the law so that it is a generalized in mathematics. It is a generalized equation which can fit all. So you have got to be very careful what you put in legislation. That will not harm our generations in the future. So I am therefore propose that we postpone the finalization of this bill to the 4th of September next week, when we will have done some kind of consultation about some of these issues that have been raised that were very important in the event, taking into consideration also the input coming from the department, various input from the law advisors from the state and from parliament. You see, we've got these very differing inputs, and so we need to put these things together and define our final version. You want to say something?
Yes, Chair. I would just like to find out what it is that you would require then from the department side in terms of the meeting for the FOSS, because my understanding is that the AGA bill is going to be discussed, and that will probably take quite a large portion of the time that is allocated for next week. Bill, and DNC, well, the department is currently preparing for that on the front, so I just want to be clear from the side of the HSRC, so what would be the requirement from the department so that we make that available to the committee in time so that you could consider that and just give us an indication of what you would need from that.
I think they have started some members here. If we are great about that, there are some things that need to be incorporated into what type of characteristics do we need for members of the...
Sorry?
Yeah. You want to rather...
Yeah, Chairperson, I do not want to have the last word, but what I was hoping to highlight to the members of the committee is section 548 of the bill clearly spells out the skills that are required. It does say that the person must have distinguished themselves in the field of human sciences or who possesses special qualifications, experience or skills in relation to some aspects of the function of the country. And then it goes on further under 5A2, which says the various factors in the field of human sciences should be represented. And under 5B, to say this one level appointed to the board must have financial expertise. And then finally, it says that there should be an additional member who is a representative of the social science research community in the rest of Africa. So from a social science point of view, because it's so broad, we consider this to be appropriate in assisting us to select the people with the right skills. That's one thing I thought we should do. Secondly, with regard to the question of the shareholders' context, again, coming back to the question of consistency, if we say that all 3A's, 3A public entities do not have that clause in their bills of shareholders' context, it would be odd to have the HSRC have that in the bill when the others do not have it, in the bill. So I would say that the mechanisms we have now, where we come to present you the business plan and we share with you what the requirements were of the shareholders' context, and then we report on that in the annual report, and that also gets audited by the Auditor General, we would consider that to be appropriate. In other words, Chairperson, I'm saying that insofar as the additions that have been requested to be addressed in the bill are actually addressed adequately with the current bill as well as the current system that we have in operation. For that reason, the only thing that should really be left out is as to whether are we going for in consultation or after consultation with. If that is the case, that will make the meeting of the force a lot more directed in terms of which direction we should take. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes,
an important number. Yeah. As far as skills and expertise of the incumbent are concerned, department knows what they want. But the applicant must also know what is required, what is their claim. Therefore, I'm not sure whether the law would really be broad. It's too broad to tell an applicant, yes, I can apply. And then often you'll find that you don't attack the licensing. You spin it out of the bag, then the applicant knows what is being proved. Otherwise, good candidates can put themselves up and show that's why I would have wanted something more appropriate to spell out what government is looking for in an
applicant. For instance, is there experience or skills in relation to some aspects? Now, what are some things you have? You know what I'm saying? You could be specific. And all I'm suggesting here is that, you know, if you want to get the right number, the correct applicants for this country, with the correct skills, it would be far easier to spell it out in here, and then we as members would be able to be in a position to see whether you have, in fact, the skills. I'm not being realistic. I don't believe that is what we're trying to establish. And please understand that, you know, what I was raising here was how I experienced the problems that arose on other boards and nominations where these particular issues were, and there the decision was taken to spell out precisely what is required. So when the advert goes out, this is one thing. The second thing which I raised in terms of more detail was the aspect of, you know, specific V, in which they talk about prescribed manner in which advertising of the particular post would take place. There's nothing there, just in a transparent and fair manner. Well, we would never know unless it was actually spelled out. If you go back to a lot of the other boards that actually say, you know, you said it within the regulation, that you've got to do so many adverts in national publications, etc. But if it's in here, then it's done. And that's all I'm trying to say. It takes another line, it might take another sink or another reference point to, you know, to other examples that have been spread in the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the CEO's response reminds me, if you look at that very section, clause 5.4a, they still in relation to some aspect of the functions of the company. In order to understand what that actually means, you have to read clause 3 and clause 4, right? Because then, some aspect would entail anything that has to do with for and of course the object of the company. So anything that within that purview will be relevant and in the address, and I don't even mention that the committee wants to put what will otherwise go out to that, but that's not what we want to do. So on a carrier, you will know, you'll state in very explicit terms the caliber of people that you are looking for, and you sell them out. The more we talk, the more I get a sense that, you know, somehow in certain respects, and I'm saying this with the greatest of humility, you're trying to pick certain aspects of the field that are unbroken. And then I think we must agree that some of the fears that we heard, I think we're going to have to find it in the fading away somewhere. Because I think the clauses that we cited in many respects, you know, they are interrelated. And you cannot really use one clause in addition to the other. Maybe that's part of the way forward, Jefferson. I don't know what our conclusion is about the meeting of the clause, because
Once again, I would actually say that the good strength part of that what you said should be advised is the after consultation consent. It is not necessarily there to question the character or motives of any particular person. And today, Mr. Manian and tomorrow is somebody else. That person, insofar as they are the executive authority, will be bound by whatever the law says must be done. So, whether they like white or scared, something like that, I mean, it's got really nothing to do with the.
That's one thing you are having said with that, because that is exactly what I was saying, that when we construct a building, we must not look into whether a person is faithful or is not faithful. We must just construct a building so that it's supposed to hold for centuries, if at all. That's what I was saying. So I don't know what you are adding now.
In good faith is a word that you, you know, especially chosen. If you enter into a contract, you must be in good faith so that you do not renege. The promise must follow on that. So you would have acted in good faith. And so I'm just saying that's why you took it literally.
But that is still not adding faith, because exactly that's what I'm saying. When we construct legislation, it should not look into anything. If it is legislation, if it says in good faith, it is in good faith in the manner in which the legislation is constructed. If we feel that we don't want good faith in our legislation, it is we are constructing that. So we must take out that. But all that it should be is that it should uphold its purpose for many centuries to come. Without good faith, I just want to respond again to the point that you have just read, Honorable Chitan. When you put it together legislation, legislation is like a model. So we can't have specifics I think Honorable Faro is saying. If you read the whole of this act, you find that it has been integrated objects of the council, functions of the council, how the council must be carried out, and it is exactly in the style that the legislation should be constructed. It has to be able to accommodate in the list a situation that may be a little bit peculiar than the time when you program the legislation. And it has to be also careful of not putting things that are already in other legislation within our constitutional spectrum. So I think the way that this particular paragraph is put together, but a technicality of some sort is legal, which is speaking to legal construction of lawmaking, which I think we can question. Unless there is a specific less here, the thing is, we can't be sure what you mean here, then I understand your point. Actually, when we constructed actually this natural science scientific profession, right? We did look into that and we put together some things that we're not winning. Actually, in this process, that are here. But the thing is, may not be that before this thing happened, and then we have to put that. But as they are now, Honorable Bishop has put them together, if they really speak to each other, if we can study thoroughly, I'm sure, since I'm going to change the time to really study, then we will come back satisfied with some of the issues that are addressed. Honestly, that is not the matter in conservation and after conservation. And that is what exactly we have to look into. And I am sure that I may be able to secure wise ideas probably in the chapter of the forum. As you are saying, on the 4th, the AGA will be. Probably take most of our time. In our experience last time,
AGA actually took very less time than this than we've done. And if we found that we can be having research ourselves into all what we've discussed today, we will even get even shorter. We may even go shorter time than this stuff. And I'm very sure that if in the AGA they have done what they did last time when they came, I mean, when they came, the consultation they did with the stakeholders when they came, I'm sure next week we can even take less than 20 minutes. I'm talking from experience of last week. Last week we should only about 40 minutes or even 30, we're finished. Because we have done a lot of good, they have done a lot of things. And we hope that in the need that we were a consensus last week, it shouldn't take more than 30 minutes, which is why we had anticipated even today. If we were ready that we would finalize all the bills, but it has come up that actually the end of the bill which we thought was not going to be wasting time. And it was an interesting probably it is better to, I don't know what members think, probably it is better to again allocate a separate, because for agents of the bill, if we are agreed with this particular thing of consultation, and I think that is all. And so, then to put a separate date, I would have thought that we can handle them both next week. Because if we can finalize them both next week, we are in a position on the 11th to put in the National House, in the National Chamber. But I don't know what you have in the position of other people are. But that is, tentatively speaking, they have said, if we can finalize this bill to be table in the chamber, to be debated in the chamber on the 11th of September, so we can do that. And so if we can, as you have raised some issues of this bill today, and if we can do justice and go back and read and look into all the things that concern us, and next week we come to finalize both of them, then we have put two legislations behind us. And it's up to members. Well, of course, if we can't, we can't.
Chairman, any reason why we could not start at 9 o'clock?
Usually there are time slots, but it depends on the hall, but the secretary can fit us. You know, but we book these halls, we have to make a tentative program just to book the hall the previous term. Now we find that it becomes a problem now to change time, but we can try that. But it's a matter that the secretary must look into, because if we start at 9, I think we can be able, from 9 to 1 next week, if we have the hall from 9 to 1, we can process all the legislation. That's it. Yeah, there are buses that leave at 7 if we want to be early. Yeah, there is a bus leaving at 7, at least for one day, you see. So we can sacrifice for one day, and all those that are leaving, that are late. I don't know, but let us agree. Let us agree whether we try and put things together next week, if possible. And know that I've already tentatively said, because I thought that we're not going to have a problem, I have said to the chairperson or the house chair, he wanted actually, this is part of what is, that's why there's an emergency meeting today, because it was party, there was a meeting last week of chairs, and they wanted to know exactly those committees that have got legislation, how long do they think it will take for them to process, to finalize them this year, you see. And I said, tentatively speaking, if things work well, we will finalize ours on the 11th of September, you see. And I think we still can, you see, because tentatively speaking, the program committee told us if you can, finalize it so that we have already put you in the program, tentative program for the 11th, to debate your legislation. And so that is what we discussed even last week with the DG, that if they are able to finish off, I saw a note from the parliamentary officer, but unfortunately he was sitting maybe away from our table, number one table, but in the number one table this was discussed very thoroughly, that if possible, if they can find common ground with the stakeholders, because it seemed to be a lot of common ground, if they could bring the legislation this week, we could finalize it, because we thought that the HSRC would be quite speedy to process, not expecting what has probably arisen today. But still, nevertheless, we can still process both of what is remaining in the laws. I mean, all of what is in the both of the legislation next week. If especially if we have the hall from 9 to 1, I think we can do justice. We'll just request Zelmaya to book the hall for 9 to 1. Already the AGA is scheduled for next, for the 4th. It's just a matter of agreeing here ourselves that also we will put you there on the 4th, and then we finalize the issues. I think you don't have any problem now, because you know, I think we agreed partly with the members here that they will study this clause, but they are interrelated of what they want to be added here. But of course, subject to next week, they can come in. But if they agree, as I think they will, once they have studied it thoroughly, they'll see that everything is knitted all together in here. The only thing that we have to agree with, ourselves with is the question of what we should understand about after consultation or in consultation. That is the only thing that I think we must master. And I think when I come out of Chairperson's Forum, if it is possible, if I got the convincing answer, I will circulate the answer to all the members so that at least they can study. Meanwhile, that this is what they feel in the House of Chairs. I don't know. I think that at this juncture myself, I will address it. Are you happy if I attend the meeting now? Okay, thank you very much, everybody who has made contribution. It's lunch, I think, here outside. Yeah, we've got some lunch here, and